Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. On May 4th, 2007, a powerful tornado ripped straight through Greensburg, Kansas, killing 11 people and destroying about 95% of the town. Republican Mayor Lonnie McCollum and some other city administrators who had lost their homes in the tornado decided that not only would they rebuild Greensburg, they would build it better and greener. In the next mayoral election in 2008, Bob Dixon, also a Republican, ran on the platform Rebuild Greensburg Green, and he won. But Dixon hadn't always been so open to the concept of going green. Reflecting on his early stereotypes, he said, "Whenever I heard the term green, all I could think of was the liberal left-wing New Age movement that we in rural America felt was just not appropriate." But his views evolved. Now the city uses wind power, has more LEED-certified buildings per capita than anywhere else in the country, and has rebuilt the city hall, a school, and a county hospital, all with sustainable building principles. So on today's show, we're going to talk about the journey that Greensburg, Kansas has been on since 2007. What lessons can other cities learn from Greensburg? And what does it mean for a city to be truly sustainable? So we are joined by Mayor Bob Dixon. He's the mayor of Greensburg, Kansas. He's a native Kansan and has been a resident of Greensburg since 1985. Dixon took office as mayor in May 2008, and he's leading the way in the process of rebuilding Greensburg following that tornado that destroyed 95% of the community. Welcome, Mayor Dixon.
Holly, great to be with you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We will later in the hour be joined by Richmond Mayor Gail McLaughlin. She is with the Green Party, and Richmond is the largest city to have a Green Party mayor, so we'll hear from her later. We're also joined here in studio by Laura Tam, who's the Sustainable Development Policy Director with SPUR, and she focuses on green buildings, water supply, wastewater, energy, and climate change. And prior to joining SPUR, Laura worked for the Environmental Protection Agency, where she conducted research and analysis that produced recommendations for the EPA to better manage environmental problems. So we'll hear more from Laura. Welcome.
Thanks so much.
Well, let's start with you, Mayor Dixon. So as I said in my introduction, you experienced a major natural disaster in 2007. The tornado ripped through Greensburg and destroyed about 95% of the city. Can you first tell us about what happened to you personally? How did the tornado change your life?
Well, Holly, me and my wife were just like all the other residents in Greensburg. In a matter of a few minutes, we were all homeless. And so it mattered not your social economic status in the community. We all lost our homes, our vehicles, our possessions that were just in piles of rubble. But what we did have, and quite frankly, in my opinion, is the most sustainable thing we have in life, is our relationships with each other. So we were able to pull together as a community, identify what our character was, what our values were, through a series of community meetings where we would have 400 and 500 people show up at those community meetings and begin that planning process of building a community back like our ancestors built for us.
So it sounds like the tornado ripped the community apart physically, but brought it together sort of spiritually and practically.
We had a big circus tent put up on a park on the east edge of town after some debris was cleaned off. And that summer we did everything in that tent. We did public planning meetings, long-term recovery, sustainable master plan. We hugged together, we cried together, we laughed together, we had community church services together because all the churches in town were leveled to rubble too. So it really drew us together as a community at the human capital or human resource level that is what is predicated on making any of this work.
And what was the genesis? How did you come to wanting to rebuild Greensburg sustainably as a green city?
Well, we were very blessed to have some real visionaries early on with Mayor Lonnie McCollum and City Administrator Steve Hewitt at the time, the City Council, leaders of the community, with the support of state and federal entities that said, hey, your name's Greensburg. Here's the opportunity to utilize that as an example of what can be done. And as you stated in your intro, we have in this country tried to make sustainability, resilience, green a ideology or a political football, when in fact it's just being environmental stewards like our pioneering ancestors were, living with the resources you had available and building and maintaining a community for future generations. That's what our ancestors did, so that was our awesome responsibility to make sure in our recovery and rebuild process that it was not just about us, but future generations.
And so can you talk just a little bit about your own political evolution and maybe the evolution that a lot of people may have journeyed along with you? You said you had to get past this idea of green being a liberal concept and how to have yourself as a Republican really embrace that. What were the political hurdles in your own thinking and, practically in terms of selling this idea to the rest of your city and Kansas?
Well, quite frankly, I want to make it very clear up front. I'm a registered Republican. I understand that. But here in the city, our city council members, our mayor, the school board are all elected nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. So we don't have the influence of R&D behind our name of an ideology. It's about us in our community, of how we're going to make it a better place for us to live and work for us and future generations. So the process for me is simply getting past the fact that let's don't put a label on it. Let's just be environmental stewards and make sure we're taking care of the resources we've been blessed with. And when we do that, and each community is doing that and being more sustainable and resilient, we're going to take care of a lot of the state and national issues that are out there right now.
Why do you think that environmentalism is such a political football with particularly, I would say, conservatives and Republicans?
Very interesting question. I can only give you my opinion on that. And I think it's simply that we rely on emotions of it. We rely on fear. We rely on those kind of things of any issue when it gets into the political realm instead of the reality, the common sense approach of how we can make a difference where we are at in our communities, in our region, in our specific locale, and understanding that. It's very hard especially at a national level here in the United States, to be all to everybody. We have so many different microclimates. We have so many different situations of population differences between San Francisco and rural Kansas, air quality. But the one thing we have consistent in this country that we're all trying to endure, and that's what sustainability is the ability to endure and the ability to continue in existence. And that's why, in my opinion, at the local level is where we can have the greatest impact that will make a difference at the national level. There's a big issue out there right now of however you want to word it, whether it's global warming or climate change or however you want to frame it. But the issue has become political and not about common sense approach to sustainability of society and economic sustainability. We all are very cognizant of where we as humans can have an impact and do have an impact on our environment. It's that we've got to get that back to how do we come up with real solutions to real problems not manufactured solutions to manufactured problems.
And that's Bob Dixon. He's the mayor of Greensburg, Kansas. He's Republican mayor, and his town, after the tornado of 2007, rebuilt, going environmentally sustainable. We're also speaking with Laura Tam, who's with SPUR. She's a sustainable development policy director with SPUR. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kern, and I'll give out our number so that you can join our conversation in just a minute. Well, actually, why don't I give it out right now? It's a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. Again, that number to join our conversation about creating sustainable cities and to talk with Bob Dixon, who's the mayor of Greensburg, Kansas, about how they did it there. The number is 866-798-TALK. And if you live in a city that's moving towards environmental sustainability, tell us what that's like. And we'd love to hear what's happening in the Santa Cruz area. We're at 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's just hear a little bit more from Mayor Dixon about how you actually, what it means to be a green city. What does Greensburg look like now compared with pre-tornado 2007 Greensburg?
Well, Holly, one thing that the city council did about 7 months after the tornado was pass a resolution that all municipal buildings would be built back at the U.S. Green Building Council's LEED Platinum level. We wanted to make sure that we built strong, energy-efficient buildings that were on the cutting-edge technologies of managing lighting, heating, air conditioning, so that we could minimize our impact on our environment and carbon emissions and all that. But we also wanted buildings that maintain property values that were going to be around for generations. Again, like our ancestors built buildings for us. What works in our climate probably won't work in San Francisco, probably won't work in other tornado areas like in the southeast, in Alabama and Mississippi, because their climate's a little different, but the processes can be the same. So we wanted to make sure that we used the state-of-the-art, cutting-edge building materials so that if this ever happened again, a disaster, we could minimize loss of life and minimize property damage. And by achieving that, we have just a beautiful city built back. We have private residents that have built back way more energy efficient homes. There's been a study made here in the community and tests run on homes that they are running. The average is around 43% better than the base code, with some of the homes running well over 70% savings of energy. We also wanted to look at our energy source from electricity, and we were able to build through public-private partnerships, a wind farm with 10 turbines that generate 12.5 megawatts of electricity. And with the renewable energy credits, we have certified that all the electricity consumed in Greensburg is from alternative energy, plus the extra that is generated goes to other neighboring communities so they can say part of their portfolio comes from renewable energies. Tried to really focus on not just energy, but also water. Our water consumption, make sure that our landscape and trees that we're planting back are trees that are indigenous to our region, taking less water, making sure people have the information and resources available to use low-flow fixtures in their homes and businesses. And so it's just promoting a general educational process of how to be good stewards of our environment.
And that's Mayor Bob Dixon of Greensburg, Kansas. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Crennan. We're also joined by Laura Tam, who's the Sustainable Development Policy Director with SPUR. And Laura, as Mayor Dixon said, you know, what works in Greensburg may not work in San Francisco. So tell us, what does work in a city like San Francisco? What does going green mean for an established city?
Well, thanks, Holly. And first, I just want to say what an honor it is to be here with Mayor Dixon. I've heard his story before, and it's just an incredible example of leadership through a crisis and really taking the opportunity to take today's cutting-edge technologies and apply them to rebuilding. You know, we face some of our own potential disasters here in San Francisco as well, where we have a lot of fault lines, and we've been doing a lot of thinking at SPUR about how you can build things that are more earthquake safe, more earthquake resilient. But in thinking about that, we've also broadened that to think about how we can build and rebuild more sustainably. Now, unlike Greensburg, San Francisco is a big city. It's been around for a long time. We have a lot of buildings that are older, that are more, 100 or more years old. We have infrastructure in the ground that's old as well. We have a lot of people here, a lot of business. It's a city that has both opportunities to improve the existing built environment as well as to build green with the buildings that are coming online. So we have had, many of the things that Mayor Dixon touched on, such as having cutting-edge building materials, using renewable energy, trying to save water. San Francisco has made a lot of progress in that realm over just the last decade, but going
and it's becoming increasingly important to do that.
Indeed, we've had a lot of we really have some cutting-edge policies with regard to many of those areas as well, with green buildings, energy, water, waste, and others.
And Mayor Dixon, I'm wondering what was the cost of rebuilding green? I think sometimes we have the sense that it costs more to build sustainably. Was that your experience, and how did you finance this?
The initial upfront cost, yes, is more. It depends upon at what level you want to go at, anywhere from 8 to 10% to possibly as high as 30%. But the one thing that you have to remember is it's you got to make a business case for it. And the business case is simply this: if it's going to cost you if it has in the past cost you $1,000 a month to live in a home, and you can cut $200 a month off your utility bill, you have $200 a month there to put into sustainable building and water savings and green things into that, and still live within that quote $1,000 a month where you're at. So it's you have to sit down and present it as a business case, and that's where sustainability and being green, as you amortize those upfront costs, you're able to get those back in a reasonable short period of time.
So you're looking at the long game there. Let's go to our first caller. Let's go to Ted in Santa Cruz. Hi, Ted. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I think the mayor may have answered part two of my question. I had a two-part question. The first part was, setting aside the sustainability and the enduring, did it take longer to rebuild your town by going green? That's the first part. And then the second part, initially, did it cost a lot more or a lot less, or were the costs more to go green? That's the two-part question.
Thanks, Ted. Yeah, he started to talk about the costs. So why don't you take that first part, the last part first, Bob?
Yes, and Ted, the simple answer to that question, yes, it does cost more. How did we finance that? We were able to leverage a lot of public-private funds. Number one is our own insurance money of the buildings that were destroyed. Number two is we were very blessed that FEMA put some money in. Being a small community, we also qualified for some USDA rural development low-interest loans and grants. And we were able to put together packages at the municipal level and at the school and at the hospital that were able to build buildings back with no indebtedness.
And to the first part of Ted's question, did it take longer to rebuild because of this eco-friendly building?
The answer is no, because we spent plenty of time early on in the planning process for those first 3 months. So we had a vision and a plan of where we wanted to head. So when we started building, we were ready to go.
And you didn't get any resistance from people who didn't want to build green, like their house, for example?
Yes, there's always resistance to everything out there, regardless of what you do in life.
All right, well, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Laura wanted to get in on this question of cost, the cost of green building, because sometimes people feel like it's prohibitive.
Yeah, you know, that was true in the Bay Area several years ago. People were concerned, and there was a little bit of a cost premium for the higher levels of LEED certification. But we've seen that come down a bit. Now that San Francisco requires all new buildings to be LEED Gold, the construction industry, the building industry, the materials are more readily available. Things like the cost of rooftop solar have come down something like 50-60% in the last 3 years. So these sustainable technologies and materials and ways of building are becoming ever more available.
Well, and it seems like it would be much more available to a city planner than it would be to a private person, but that's no longer true. There's subsidies for example, solar and...
There have been subsidies which have helped to really bring down the cost. Some of them are actually expiring now, which is actually kind of how you expect those subsidies are there to transform the market. The market has kind of been transformed. So not completely. We could still do more.
Well, tell us what more you'd like to be done.
In the realm of solar?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would say that we could still do a lot. We could have a lot more of an incentive to, I know it's coming, but it's taking a long time to pay people to have, to feed their energy back into the grid. Right now, you can just zero out your own use, but you can't build a system that is oversized for yourself, even if you have the availability to do it. Sell that energy back to the grid. Be great to be able to install community solar installations where a neighborhood asset could be covered with solar panels and everybody could kind of buy into it.
What are the impediments to doing that?
Right now, there's some policy impediments that are probably not super interesting to get into, but it's those types of questions, those types of technologies are available. Those types of community systems could become available in a couple years if we keep working on it.
And what else? What are some of your other priorities?
Well, we'd love to see. We are doing a pretty good job at water efficiency, but of course everybody could be doing more. We'd like to see more recycled water, more on-site reuse of water, more gray water use. We'd like to see more energy efficiency. It's kind of hard to measure success of energy efficiency because you have every sort of building has different problems when it comes to using energy and opportunities to save. So more energy audits. There are quite a lot of rebates still available for energy efficiency improvements, and that makes a really big difference, especially in some of the places that get colder and hotter in the Bay Area and in California than San Francisco does. We'd like to see more on-site renewable generation for both cities and utilities and private homeowners.
And that's Laura Tam. She's Sustainable Development Policy Director with SPUR. We're also speaking with Bob Dixon, who's the mayor of Greensburg, Kansas. We'll be joined soon by Mayor Gail McLaughlin of Richmond. And we're talking about this new trend of greening cities, both locally and nationally. And in Greensburg, Kansas, that city was leveled by a tornado in 2007, and they decided to rebuild as an entirely green city. So we're asking, what can other cities learn from the Greensburg example? If you want to join our discussion, we are at 866-798-TALK. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you'd like to share a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion, or ask a question you feel needs to be answered, please join our conversation by calling toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. And again, it's a toll-free call. You can also send your question via email to feedback@yourcallradio.org, or if you prefer, simply post a comment on the website, yourcallradio.org. www.worldhaveyoursay.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the World Service of the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. And following that at noon, it's Ira Glass and This American Life.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Today, we're talking about what it takes for a city to be truly environmentally sustainable. In 2007, the city of Greensburg, Kansas, was leveled by a major tornado, and they rebuilt it as an entirely green city. Tomorrow, we'll hear all about the San Francisco Ocean Film Festival. Friday is our weekly media roundtable. We speak with journalists about coverage of the week's news. And today, we're asking, what can other cities learn from Greensburg? What does it mean for cities around Northern California to go green? And if you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. We're wondering what's happening in the Santa Cruz area. So if you live there, let us know how you're greening your cities and towns there. And what are the politics of going green? Mayor Dixon mentioned that sometimes environmentalism can be seen as a liberal cause or a political football. What do you think? How can we move beyond those stereotypes to have more sustainable cities, states, and globe? 866-798-TALK is our toll-free number. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We're joined by Laura Tam, who's with SPUR, Bob Dixon, who's the mayor of Greensburg, Kansas, and we will be joined by Mayor Gail McLaughlin of Richmond in just a minute. But Mayor Dixon, I wanted to ask you just about the effect on your town's economy from doing this sustainable development. I think that pre-tornado, your population was around 1,500, and now it's, I think I read, 778 people live there. So what were the economic effects for Greensburg?
The number one thing, Holly, was devastating because all the businesses were leveled to rubble. And so being an agriculture, oil, and gas-based economy, we needed to get back to where we could service the agriculture community as quick as possible, and those businesses that did found temporary facilities to bring in and get that taken care of. But what the positive part of going green and being sustainable, and quite frankly, sustainability is not just about our buildings and energy efficiency, it's economic sustainability. People have to live and work in your community, and how do you blend all that together? But anyway, us being a living laboratory has just drawn tourism, ecotourism has really spurred our economy of people coming to the community, of being able to touch, see, feel, hear the stories of what has worked, of what you would change if you had to do it again, those kind of things, as they're looking to be more sustainable in their own lives and municipal lives. And so we are that living laboratory that you can come and see, and that has really helped our economy. We are still working and working daily on fulfilling a strategic economic development plan and following that so that we can truly, as far as the economy, make us a sustainable economy in the community so that we will not just be a surviving community but a thriving community.
And we're joined now by Gail McLaughlin, who is the mayor of Richmond, which is the largest city in the U.S. to have a Green Party mayor. Welcome, Gail. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Holly. Thank you for having me.
And do you think the fact that you were elected as mayor of Richmond meant that the residents of Richmond wanted a greener future?
Well, I think that I was elected because my values resonated with the people of Richmond, and those values are widespread. Yes, sustainability is key, but as Mayor Dixon mentioned, we want a sustainable economy as well, and so my values for equity of our low-income community that we have in Richmond, a large working-class and low-income community, so we have found ways to build that sustainability with equity, and by many of our initiatives, including things like we have offered rebates for renewables like solar installations and energy efficiency. But at the same time, if they take advantage of the rebate, they have to hire our residents who have went through our solar installation green job training program. So we weave things together, and I think that's why I was elected and reelected, because people saw what I stand for in terms of health, equity, and sustainability, and justice, you know, is right in line with their own values.
Well, and it's interesting because you're a Green Party mayor, and Mayor Dixon is a Republican mayor, and yet we have these, I think, stereotypes. Mayor Dixon mentioned that environmentalism is seen as a liberal issue. I think a lot of people see environmentalism as, to some degree, a luxury of the more well-off, and yet you're in a very working-class community. Richmond is a working-class city, really, and you've made that a big platform, piece of your both economic and environmental platform. Can you tell us a little bit more about your environmental initiatives in Richmond?
Yes, we've really become a leader in terms of environmental change, environmental justice, and sustainability initiatives in the Bay Area. For example, in 2010, we were number one in the Bay Area for solar installed per capita. We have a styrofoam ban. We have a plastic bag ban. We want to make sure that since we are a city on the bay, 32 miles of shoreline, we want to make sure we protect the bay and we don't have plastic bags and styrofoam which don't degrade going into the bay or littering our city. We've really highlighted the importance of open space and urban gardens. We have, you know, something like 26 community gardens. Urban agriculture is something we've brought forward in the city of Richmond, and we have nonprofits tending them. And again, we have young people involved, and we give them, through the nonprofits and through our summer job program, we give them stipends to tend these gardens. We have park renovations. We know open space and park renovation is something that beautifies the city, improves the environment, and improves the health of our residents. We have a green building ordinance, bike paths, pedestrian master plan. We have smart growth around BART. We have, you know, many transportation-oriented initiatives. So, and we have a climate action plan. So while we have the second, or we're in the process, I should say, of getting a climate action plan, while we have the second largest oil refinery in the state of California, the Chevron Richmond refinery in our city's borders, which has the highest amount of greenhouse gas emissions in the state, we are working hard, we're suing Chevron, in fact, to regulate this large refinery, protect the people whose health has and safety has been put at risk through a major fire in 2012. And at the same time as we push back and, you know, really make Chevron be accountable to the people, we are doing our city-oriented policies, getting people into public transportation, onto bikes, you know, making a bike-friendly and pedestrian-friendly city, and putting all these initiatives into place to showcase us as a city that stands for this new green economy that we need, a new green type of planning that needs to happen nationwide and worldwide.
And I remember Van Jones really talking about this new green economy being a way to achieve more economic justice, particularly for low-income communities of color. How big of an effect has your jobs program been on unemployment in Richmond, especially for low-income communities of color?
Right. We have like a, I believe it's a 80 or 85 or maybe even 90% placement rate in terms of our job training program. We have had cohort after cohort, 20-something cohorts of graduates already from our job training program, which is not only solar installation, but also, you know, best practices for plumbing and carpentry, using green materials, using water conservation, weatherization of homes, and those are the kind of construction types of practices that are the 21st century type of practices. So we are training our residents, and many of them are returning parolees from prison, and people who have been in the trades and now need to be retrained, have been laid off, et cetera, for years. So we are really making this a priority, and we have had a great success rate. We have a high unemployment rate still. It's getting better because the economy has moved a little bit in the right direction, not nearly enough. But we continue to work hard and continue to find ways to put our residents to work in the jobs of this century, in the green jobs, as Van Jones said, and he has been a long promoter of our work here in Richmond. We need to float all boats, you know, with this new economy. We can't expect this, you know, to repeat practices of the past. So we're definitely preparing and making progress along those lines in Richmond.
And that's Gail McLaughlin. She's mayor of Richmond, California. We're also joined on the line by the mayor of Greensburg, Kansas, Bob Dixon, and Laura Tam, who's with Spur. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and you can join our conversation about creating greener cities by calling 866-798-TALK. And in what ways do you think that the place you live could be greener? And if you do environmental work or urban planning, how do you get local government to pay attention to and implement sustainability initiatives that you advocate? And what do you think are the politics of going green? Our number is 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And let us know about what's happening in the Santa Cruz area. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we got this email from Glenn, who says, a facet of green building that you never hear about is underground infrastructure. Construction contractors and petroleum producers actively lobby to get plastic pipes specified for underground construction, but that's not a sustainable and green practice. Drinking water is best delivered in steel or ductile iron pipe. Both of these pipes are made with a significant percentage of recycled material. He's got a lot more information there, but I'm wondering, Laura, if you can talk about this kind of underground infrastructure and how you green that, especially if you're living in an older city like we are.
I mean, certainly a lot of our underground infrastructure at this point is kind of getting older and is in need of rebuilding, especially with seismic concerns available. I'm not sure about what he's mentioning with respect to the different types of materials in the underground area. I know that we try to use the materials that are best suited for longevity as well as durability and seismic resilience. But I will speak to the fact that there are a lot of things that we could be doing above ground to reduce the load and pressure on the things that are underground, such as, you know, with respect to water pipes and underground infrastructure for carrying wastewater. We could be doing a lot more above ground to manage stormwater, rainwater where it falls. We can do away with larger pipes, which of course use more materials. If we're able to build green infrastructure in the streets and on rooftops and in public open spaces to manage water in a more sustainable way, possibly even to capture and reuse it. We have a really groundbreaking policy in San Francisco allowing buildings to catch rainwater and treat rainwater and wastewater on site and reuse it for non-potable uses. This is a really groundbreaking way of saving water and building sustainable systems into buildings to reuse water.
And Mayor Dixon and Mayor McLaughlin, I love it that we have both of you on the show. And I was wondering if you could talk, each of you, about sort of the parallels and differences of the fact that you're, you know, from very different sides of the political spectrum. And yet you have very similar philosophies and you're trying to implement practices that are very similar. So what do you think are the parallels and differences? You're also ones in a much bigger city and Greensburg is a much smaller city. But how do you look at what the others are doing and how to cross this big political divide? Go ahead, Mayor Dixon, first.
Well, as I alluded to earlier, I think we get so hung up on putting labels on things instead of getting results. And the basic results of what Mayor McLaughlin's doing in Richmond and what we're doing here is that environmental stewardship. It's looking at the long-term maintenance cost, what's it going to cost for city budgets down the road, and doing the right, prudent, and responsible thing for our environment. And that's all we're all trying to do, and that makes us green and sustainable. Richmond, being in the situation there is doing a fantastic job of addressing what they need to, being right on the bay and their population and their business climate, as we are here. So I think that more than anything, what you have to do is you have to know, number one, what your values are, what's your character, and then match that around what you're trying to accomplish, because we are such a diverse country.
Well, thank you for that. Mayor McLaughlin, what do you think?
Yes, I think that was well said. It's clear to me that this goes beyond, you know, party affiliation. We're talking about things that, you know, people from various the realm or the wide range of political affiliations can agree with. The environment and the economy are two sides of the same coin, are two aspects of a reality that need to be addressed together. If we ignore the environment, as has been done throughout the 20th century, what happens is it comes back to bite you because it impacts your economics. What happens is you have a degraded environment that you now have to put money into to recover from and to rebuild and to restore. So to think in terms of the environment is to think in terms of the economy. Hmm. And to build a sustainable planet is thinking along both those parallel lines. And so I definitely think this is something that all political trains of thought can and should get on board with. You know, let's try and find that those pathways into the future that generations to come will thank us for rather than curse us for ignoring.
And let me get to, we've got a lot of callers on the line. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're talking about creating eco-friendly, sustainable cities with two politicians who are in it for the long haul here. Gail McLaughlin is the mayor of Richmond, California. Bob Dixon is the mayor of Greensburg, Kansas. And we're also joined by Laura Tam, who's Sustainable Development Policy Director with SPUR. Let's go to Julia in Santa Cruz. Hi, Julia. Welcome to your call.
Oh, hi there. Thank you. I had a question, actually, for all the parties, and great thanks for the initiatives they've shown and the ethics, the values, the character of both initiatives in both places. Simultaneously, I wanted to ask what they felt were their most powerful tools for leading these initiatives and mobilizing the people. I personally attempt, both in speaking with our city council and now working on projects concerning sustainability, water, wise water use. We've had a great event recently, last weekend, here in Santa Cruz. But what were the tools that they found were the most effective way of approaching and actually mobilizing the people that tend to tune out?
Okay, let's Julia, stay on the line. Let's get an answer. What were the most powerful tools that you used to mobilize around these themes? Mayor McLaughlin and Mayor Dixon?
Yes, I would say the first tool that comes to mind is the most important, and that's to really organize from the grassroots, to build alliances and collaborations among people throughout the city, throughout neighborhoods, nonprofits, you know, grassroots organizations that are willing to organize their membership and to make it clear that they will come to city council meetings and put pressure on others on the council that may not have the same values or may not see the importance of building the kind of future of sustainability that those of us who have explored and researched this and are on board with this pathway for a viable future. So I find that building from the grassroots, which is something we've done in Richmond, we do this day in and day out as an elected official working side by side with the community, I feel is my greatest tool.
And how about you, Mayor Dixon?
Well, Mayor McLaughlin just said it so eloquently, and I'll just have three words that I think work so well here. Number one is education.
Laura Tam is nodding her head as you say this, yeah.
And number two is communications. And number three is action.
All right. Well, listen, we have so many callers on the line. I would like to get to as many as we can. Julia, did that answer all of your questions? It looks like it did. Okay, let's go to George in San Francisco. Hi, George. Welcome to your call.
Thanks. I think we were about the point of addressing this as a question for people in San Francisco in a drought state. What is the takeaway that we could be applying in San Francisco or in any city where we determine that water conservation and recycling has become a high priority?
All right. George, Laura wants to take that one on.
Sure. I mean, we are actually a very water-efficient city. We've done a lot of work over the last 20 years to improve the water efficiency of our built environment here in San Francisco. And one of the reasons we're so water efficient, of course, has to do with the built environment itself. Nationwide, 50% of water use generally is dedicated to outdoor watering and lawns, and we don't have a lot of those in San Francisco, so we're a little bit ahead of the game. But there's still more we could be doing to implement water-efficient technologies. You know, high-efficiency fixtures are one thing. Not using excess water when you don't need to, like not watering sidewalks and things like that, are important, as well as in your home, using gray water to potentially for non-potable uses like washing dishes or using it in the outdoors if you have one, as well as we could be doing more as a city in terms of planning and citywide to be building more recycled water and doing more non-potable reuse. So we're pretty good at conservation, but we could be doing more to recycle the incredible water supplies that we already have.
And let me try and get one more caller on here. Batya in Santa Cruz, welcome to your call.
Thank you. I just wanted to let people know what's going on in Santa Cruz. One of the things going on in Santa Cruz is a Go Solar rollout plan that's being put forth by the city itself. And they're going to be holding monthly meetings with all kinds of constituents, business community, the residential community, to let people know what is possible in terms of solar. You know, they've done a whole pamphlet about which solar companies have what to offer, what kind of financing is available, and that sort of thing. And the good thing is that it's really a city-led adventure. And I think we already have solar panels. I guess some of the schools here have gotten grants to get solar panels over their parking lots, and that's a really popular item right now.
Well, thank you so much for that report from Santa Cruz. And we're running low on time here. I'm wondering where each of you look for inspiration. Are there examples around the world that we should know more about? Mayor Dixon?
My examples are places like what Mayor McLaughlin in Richmond's doing, Mayor Hartwell in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I think that the network that we have as we visit with each other, there's some great things going on in communities all over this United States and all over the world. Those are what we need to continue to offer hope to each other, offer encouragement, and those are the great things that I look at.
How about you, Mayor McLaughlin?
Yes, I certainly look at other cities and many, many of the grassroots groups that, you know, like one of your guests who has worked with a group to address the problems that we have of sustainability. So people involved with nonprofits and grassroots organizations inspire me that, you know, dig
deep, you know, really deep on this one issue of sustainability. As mayors, I think we have so many issues on our plate. We highlight sustainability as one of them, but we also rely on those who focus on sustainability as a sole issue to learn from and to be inspired by. I'm always inspired by those cities that have undergone such extreme disasters like tornadoes and such like in Greensburg and have made a commitment and implementation of new policies, green sustainable policies to rebuild with. So there's inspiration abounding throughout our country that I'm inspired with.
That's wonderful to hear about. How about you, Laura? We're just running out of time, so you get the last word.
Well, I'm really inspired by what is happening in Richmond as well as Greensburg, and congratulations to both of you mayors for your leadership there. I think there's examples from all over the country and all over the world we can look to as we try to improve multimodal transit, as we try to improve green infrastructure. We can look at Portland and Philadelphia. We can look to Copenhagen for their incredible bike infrastructure. We can look to Rotterdam in the Netherlands for protecting from climate change. We can look to New York City for trying to reduce our emissions and coming up with sustainable climate action plans. So there's a lot of great examples of sustainability and action around the world, and although we're doing quite a lot here, right here in San Francisco.
And you're in the planning stages of having an eco district in San Francisco. We'll put information about that at yourcallradio.org. I want to thank all of you. It's been a real pleasure to talk with you. Laura Tam is Sustainable Development Policy Director with SPUR, and we were joined by Mayor Gail McLaughlin of Richmond and Mayor Bob Dixon of Greensburg, Kansas. Again, we'll put information about all the things that they're doing there at yourcallradio.org. That's where you can also post resources that we should know about in terms of the Sustainable Cities Movement, and you can continue the conversation there. It's yourcallradio.org. I want to thank all of my guests for joining us. Thanks for your calls and emails. I apologize that we couldn't get to everybody, but we will continue these conversations on Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. How can storytelling about the ocean help save it? On the next Your Call, we'll talk with organizers and filmmakers of the 11th annual San Francisco Ocean Film Festival, which will feature films about sharks, whales, deep sea diving, and coastal cultures. This will also be the first year that they debut ocean films made by teens. So what kinds of stories make you feel connected to the ocean and its future? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.